I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm in Studio B, and I'm sitting across from my good friend, Daniel Chacon.
And I'm in Studio B, sitting across not only from my good friend, Benjamin Alida Sainz, but also my dog, Kafka, who is in the studio today.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
The reason why I brought Kafka, other than Kafka is a great companion, is because today we're interviewing Rita Mae Brown. She is a novelist, and her mystery series, which is called the Mrs. Murphy Mysteries, bestsellers, every single one of them, are co-written by her cat, Sneaky Pie. And she just came out with a new book called Sneaky Pie for President, where her cat decides she's going to organize the animals and run for president. So since she's such an animal lover, I thought Kafka should be involved in this interview. Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah.
For Poem of the Week, Ben's going to read a poem.
By Karen Fizer.
Excellent. And I will be doing the poetic license today on Kafka, my dog, my companion, and my best friend.
And that name came from?
Oh, you know, that's an interesting thing that you ask. You know, Kafka, obviously there's a writer named Kafka, and a lot of people, one time this guy, you know, a friend of mine saw Kafka, and, you know, the first time I got him, says, what's his name? I said, Kafka. And he goes, how pretentious. Shouldn't his name be like Scraggly or Scruffy or something like that? And I thought, you know, okay, I see your point, but I didn't choose the name Kafka. I had nothing to do with it. And I believe that all dogs come with their own name. And Kafka asserted his name. Do you know how it happened?
I'm all ears.
This is a true story.
Okay.
I promise you this is a true story.
I'm listening.
I went to the shelter. I saw Kafka. He was the cutest little dog in the world.
Yes, he is.
And so I said, you know, I'm going to take this dog home. I filled out the papers, and they knew I was legit, so they let me take him. And I took him to PetSmart. And you know, at PetSmart, you can buy a little tag for your dog. All you have to do is you go to this computer, and you type in the name, right?
Right.
Well, I bought one for the dog who would soon be Kafka. And I took Kafka to the machine, I put him on the keyboard, and then I remembered I had forgotten my receipt, so I went back to the cash register. But what happened was while I was gone, he randomly, with his paws, hit letters. And when I came back, it said Kafka. So I knew that was his name. That's a true story.
So you have a very literate dog.
Well, I don't know if he's literate or random, but that's how he got his name Kafka, and I respected it. You're going to get a dog, you tell me.
Yes, I'm going to get a dog.
What kind do you want?
I am going to go rent a house.
You're going to rent a house for the dog?
I found it, and I wanted a house. I live in an apartment, and I want a house because I wanted a yard because I want to get a dog.
Oh, cool. And do you have any idea of what kind of dog you're going to get?
No, I'm going to go to the pound, but I already have a name. I mean, it's going to be a female.
Wait a minute. You already have a name?
Yes. Her name is going to be Maggie.
Wait a minute. How could you get a dog and get the name first? Is that doesn't make sense.
It makes perfect sense because I'm going to go to the pound and say, that's a Maggie.
It's almost the way you work on a novel. You have the title before you even have any of the characters.
Well, that's the way I am.
Well, I guess if your novels are so darn good, your Maggie's going to be a great dog.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this dog, and it's going to come very soon, so I'm very excited.
And, you know, Maggie and Kafka are going to have play dates.
Yes, they are.
Okay, we're going to talk to Rita Mae Brown, best-selling author, co-author with her cat, Sneaky Pie, of the Mrs. Murphy Mysteries. We're going to talk about her new book, so we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Clinton Luther, I'm a dog. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Clinton Luther, I'm a dog. And you can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed my you no more. You told me you want my class.
Rita Mae Brown is the best selling author of 37 books, including the immensely popular Mrs. Murphy Mystery Series, which she co-writes with a cat, yes, a domestic cat named Sneaky Pie. What's that? Oh, it's Kafka's. What are you saying, Kafka? Oh, Kafka wanted me to admit that he co-wrote my last book. Thank you, Kafka. She is a feminist activist, a lesbian pioneer, a fox hunter, a screenwriter, and an animal rescuer and activist. She even became the target of paparazzi during her relationship with tennis star Martina Navratilova. Her latest novel, or one of them at any rate, is Sneaky Pie for President, which is a novel about a domestic cat who is tired of how humans are messing up the environment and everything else. So she decides to organize other animals and run for president. Welcome, Rita Mae Brown.
Thank you.
But I have to tell you, I brought my dog in today for the interview. His name is Kafka, and he's sitting here at one of the chairs because you know how you have a co-writer for your mystery novels?
I do.
Well, I have a co-reader for The Sneaky Pie just to check the authenticity of the animals and how they think. And Kafka read it, and he wanted to be involved in the interview.
Well, I think he should.
In one of your bios, you write about the day you were born. You say, the cats, hounds, and horses of the world rejoiced. The humans didn't give a damn. What do they know? Can we start this by talking about animals? What do animals mean to you, and how many of them do you have?
Well, I mean, in the house, I have rescues, so I've got about 11 dogs.
Wow.
And I don't know how many cats. But,
my gooseness.
But I have 40 horses.
Wow.
And some of those are rescues, some are retirees. But I have a big farm, so it's not like they're sitting on top of one another or on me. But,
not an apartment in New York.
So you're not a cat lady.
Well, I don't know. I'm probably anything lady. If it's got four legs, I'm it. But and then I have about 100 foxhounds and about 25 bassets. And they live in specially made kennels, and those are the hounds that I hunt.
Wow, you must have quite a property, and it must be, for you, an animal lover, must be just paradise.
You know, it really is. People always want to travel. I don't want to go anywhere.
Wow, yeah, I have a dog and a cat, and it's hard to travel. I can't imagine having 11 dogs and plus everything else, that traveling probably isn't very convenient.
No, it isn't. But you know, I'm very lucky. I mean, for the Fox Hunting Club and the Bassett Club, I have people that can help me, and it's just great. And I hasten to add, we don't kill anything; we just chase it.
I have my dog Kafka, and he's here in the studio with us, like I said. And whenever I move into a new place, because I tend to move a lot, he checks out the rooms, and sometimes he can know stuff about a room that I don't quite know yet, that it takes me a couple of months to figure out there's a particular energy that maybe Kafka didn't like or was attracted to right from the beginning.
Well, think about it. You have about 10 million scent receptors. Kafka has anywhere between 110 million and 200 million, depending on his breed. So he can literally smell time.
Oh, I love the way you say that.
No, really. Like when I take my foxhounds out, they know what animals have crossed, let's say, an acre. They know who they were. They know when they crossed. They know if they had any interaction with one another or whatever. They can even smell some insects and tell you when they are there.
Wow.
Humans haven't a clue because we rely on our eyes. That's our primary sense.
Well, you know, this is a really good segue into your novel that both of us just read, Sneaky Pie for President. Sneaky Pie is a cat, and I believe Sneaky Pie is also co-author of the Mrs. Murphy series of mysteries, isn't it?
She's currently working on her 22nd.
And tell us a little about this Sneaky Pie for President book.
You know, it's funny. As we were leading into the election, and this is my attitude, nobody has to agree with me, I was so disgusted. Uh-huh. With the manner in which the election was conducted, just uh-huh. the sheer hatefulness. And it seemed that nobody really wanted to solve problems. They just wanted to prove that the other guy was a perfect jerk, you
right.
know, which
yeah.
isn't any way to run a country. And I thought, you know, I would like us to be reminded that we're a good and a generous people. We aren't what's in Washington. So I thought, who better to remind us than a cat that was saved from the SPCA? And so she goes around and tries to enlist animals in her quest for the presidency and to get us as humans to see what they need, not just what we need.
In this novel, Sneaky Pie for President, there's a scene that kind of reminds me of what you and I were just talking about, where dogs are taking a walk with the CO. And by the way, a CO is a human, stands for can opener. The dog is incredulous that the human is about to walk right into where there's, I believe it's a wolf. No, a bobcat, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was about to walk into a bobcat, and the dog is incredulous. How could that human not smell that bobcat?
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful detail and shows the different realities that the animals have in your world than the humans and probably in the real world.
Well, when you walk Kafka or your people, you know, that are tuning in, walk their dogs. What does your dog do? You, let's say you have a dog park somewhere in the town or whatever, mm-hmm. and you can take the dog off a leash.
Right.
Well, the and let's say yours is a good dog. He's not going to just run off. But they usually run ahead of you. They
right.
stop, and they look back. You can say, well, why are they doing that? They're having a good time. No, the dog remembers its job with a human. Your dog is telling you up to that point, it's safe. So you'll go up to that point, your dog will run on.
Wow. That's so interesting that you say that, because I had a dog who has now gone to dog heaven. Her name was Sophie. She was part lab and part pit bull. And she would always bolt, and I would run after her, and she would always look back. And I thought, you know, and to my mind, she was mocking me.
Well, I can't speak for Sophie, but it's interesting. Wherever she ran to, she knew it was safe, because if it wasn't, she would have growled or she would have attacked whatever she felt would harm you.
How was it that you became a writer?
You know, I have to thank my dad for this, because when I was little, I wanted to be a farmer and a huntsman. And my dad said, by the time you're an adult, the small farm will be a dream. And
that's
he was
incredible
right.
Incredible insight. Wow.
Yeah. Well, he was a very smart man. And he said, you got to find something else. If you want to be a small farmer, then you know, whatever else you do is going to support it, because you're not really going to be able to make money doing it.
Mm.
And I do. I farm. I mean, I have a real farm, and I love it. But if I didn't write, I'd go down the tubes.
But that's funny that you thought you were going to go broke being a farmer, so you wanted to be a writer.
Yeah, you know, well, I had a little bit of a gift, and it was pretty obvious early. And all my teachers would say, gee, you need to be a writer, this or that. They were probably just trying to shut me up. But it worked out. And then I took Latin and Greek, which has really served me well. It's why my career has lasted so long. I've got such an incredible foundation in the beginnings of our literature and how to use language. And, of course, now that's gone. I mean, they've taken Latin out of the schools, and it's just, you know, we have really cheated young people terribly.
Right.
We say, you know, we say we're making it easy. We're not. You're supposed to make it hard when they're young. You know?
That makes sense. You know, and I think if I recall correctly from reading your bio, your first two books were collections of poems, but your first novel, which was incredibly successful after you spent a lot of time trying to sell it, was called Ruby Fruit Jungle. And it became one of the most important novels, literarily speaking, but also for lesbian rights and for the lesbian movement. And that must have just completely changed your career.
Well, it shocked me. I mean, I would walk into a room and people expected this big dyke in black leather and a motorcycle. You know, here comes this little southerner, you know, who'd been through cotillion. It was quite a jolt to them, and boy, it was quite a jolt to me, too. But it all worked out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those were such incredibly difficult days in many ways, not just for me, but for the whole society, struggling to come to grips with racism and sexism and the institutionalized mistreatment of people who were perceived as different.
Right.
And, of course, now the struggle, it's the same struggle, but over Hispanic Americans. And I'm like, what's the struggle? They're here. They're fabulous. Get over it.
So, Rita Mae, what are you working on now?
Actually, I just have a novel that came out November 20th called Fox Tracks, which is another one of the fox hunting books. And I, you know, sometimes, this is terrible to say, but sometimes I don't like what I write, because I always know what I wanted to write. You only know what I wrote. You know, now, oh, God, I didn't quite hit it this time. But this book, Fox Tracks, I really like. But as we speak, Sneaky Pie is working on another one of her mysteries that takes place around Halloween, and there are these really grisly killings.
Let's talk a little bit about Sneaky Pie. Tell us about Sneaky Pie as co-author.
Well, first of all, I found Sneaky Pie on St. Francis Day, so you know it has to be lucky.
Right, that's right.
And we were in Los Angeles, and I was working in film and in TV, and I'm one of the few people that will tell you I loved it. Most people pretend they're superior to it. I loved it. and I really love TV, even more than film, because it's quick.
Right,
you know,
right.
you write a screenplay, and it might get made 15 years later. You know, you do a teleplay or something for TV, and it's usually up and running, and it's so exciting.
Oh, it's like the short story is to the novel.
In many ways, it is. But to see a gifted actor, actress, speaking your lines and doing it even better than you imagined it, it is so exciting. I mean, I would just sit there, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, it sounds so much better than what I really wrote. But I was there, and it was the Writers Guild strike in 1988. and I'm a member of the Writers Guild, so we couldn't work.
One of your 11 dogs is barking.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the rescues. Her name is Uggams. At any rate, no money was coming in, but the bills were certainly rolling in, and I didn't know what to do. I'm sitting there, and my cat says, well, you need to write mysteries. People love mysteries. Well, here I am, a classics major, Greek and Latin. I am going to descend to the suburbs of literature. Never, never, never. You know, I just simply won't do it. Well, the bells kept coming in, and I started to think, you know, she has a point there. God bless that cat. She saved me from being a terrible literary snob. You know what? Anytime anybody picks up a book, I don't care if it's on e-books, of course, which is costing me a bloody fortune, but as long as they're reading, I'm happy.
You know, I remember being in grad school. I had my MFA at the University of Oregon, and I remember a couple of us were sitting around talking about, I wanted to write a pop fiction novel. I started thinking about it, and everyone's talking about how that would be selling out. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I come from working class background. A pop fiction novel isn't selling out. Maybe literary fiction is selling out.
And I have to say that as I'm sitting here having this conversation, you know, when I was in high school, I read everything. And I had no kind of taste. You know, I would read literary stuff, but I love Jacqueline Suzanne and Harold Robbins.
They told a good story.
Yeah, they did.
And let's be clear. Chaucer was not a literary figure. He was a diplomat. Right. He didn't write for high art. Shakespeare wrote to make a buck. And so did Dickens.
And Dickens made a lot of bucks.
Yeah, and so did Victor Hugo. I mean, the list. You know, who was it? It was, I can't remember his name now. The wonderful writer in France. Anyway, he was a playwright in the 16th. Molière. He said, writing is like sex. First you do it for love. Then you do it for a few friends. Finally, you do it for the money.
Well, it was certainly wise of you to listen to Sneaky Pie and to write those mysteries, because those are bestsellers. And I would imagine that is your, at this point, your major source of income.
It is. It is. I mean, the other books do well, but hers do the best of all. And a part of the reason is, Americans love animals.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, they really love, and cat people are a little crackers, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing I wanted to ask you about, this cat people, dog people dichotomy. It doesn't seem like you're really stuck in that.
I love all animals. I really do. I mean, I don't always love the ones that might look at me as lunch. I like to kind of get away.
Right, right.
If it's domesticated, I really do love it. And even some wild ones. I have a red-shouldered hawk. I think you have down there, too. Mm. And whenever I go out, she follows me. And she'll speak. They have a funny high cry. And when I get to the end of her hunting territory, she stops and, you know, she sits and waits. I mean, they recognize who we are as a species, but they also recognize who you are as an individual.
Rita Mae Brown, we could talk for hours.
But, well, we could, and what fun, huh?
Yeah, what fun. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. And you're in El Paso, right?
Yes, we are.
You tell those folks, if they don't do this, I'm going to put them in a novel and give them a dread social disease. They need to go to their SPCAs, and if you can't bring an animal home, just give them $10, will you?
Oh, that's nice.
Okay, that's great.
Kafka thanks you for that, because Kafka is a shelter dog. All right, well, thank you so much, Rita Mae Brown. Check out her new novel, Sneaky Pie for President. It is a hoot, as they say.
It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
I believe my woman got a black cat on. I believe my woman got a black cat on. Seems like everything I do it wrong. Look here.
For this week's poem of the week, I've chosen a poem by Karen Pfizer from her book of poems, Words Like Fate and Pain. Karen Pfizer was a Stegner Fellow, a friend of mine, actually, and a philosopher, a brilliant, brilliant woman who suffered from undiagnosed Lyme disease for many, many years, which really ravaged her body. And this poem is entitled, Pointing to the Place of the Pain. Pointing to the place of the pain,
The epigraph is by Wittgenstein from the Blue Book. Do we know the place of pain in Euclidean space so that when we know where we have pain, we know how far away from two of the walls of this room and from the floor? You keep thinking of pain as a place you could leave, walk out and slam the last heavy door on. Then you would be whole, returned magically to life like Tony Curtis playing Houdini, locked in the trunk at the lake bottom, many takes to make his escape look perfect. You could breathe again. Imagine the pain you inhabit as a region in between, ineluctably your own, like your softest skin or the space of freedom where your memories happen, a room no one else can come into, however close they try to stand. How strange that only feeling could keep you in this place, quiet and wounded and intent as the air is around real suffering, the pool of silence spreading out from the hospital bed. That was Karen Pfizer's poem, Pointing to the Place of the Pain.
This week on Poetic License, I am going to say a few words about my constant companion and best friend, Kafka, my dog. It's called Kafka and I. It was less than a year ago. I was watching my dogs run across a field surrounded by mountains, my little big-eared mutt Kafka and the sleek black lab mix Sonnet, named after the poetic form by my poet partner. I saw my dogs running in the field as if it were the best thing anyone could do, so happy, so free, running, and at that moment I figured out a writing problem that had been perplexing me for years, how I should organize the autobiography I've been working on for more than a decade, my life story, the final story. Not some of the parts led by language and image that I occasionally publish in lit mags and read as a poetic license on our radio show, but the final word, the Rainer Maria Rilke's God Grant Us the Ability to Choose Our Own Death life story of Daniel Chacon. I would organize it according to the dogs I've loved. In my life, there have always been dogs, and quite frankly, some of the hardest moments of my life were when I lost them. I don't want to be insensitive, but I want to tell the truth. When my dog Felix died, it was more difficult for me than when my father died and all four of my grandparents. I remember a week after Felix died, after we buried him in the backyard, planted a rose bush over his body, which the very next morning would bloom the most beautiful yellow rose I had ever seen. A week afterwards, I was driving through El Paso on a routine errand, and I was on the phone with a friend. I hadn't told anyone yet that Felix had died because it was too difficult to talk about. But on the phone, driving, I told my friend Augie in L.A., who knew Felix so well because we had slept, Felix and I, so many nights on the futon in his apartment near Venice Beach. And I told him about the death of Felix, how he died in our bedroom, how we put him on a baby mattress and carried him downstairs, how we drove down the freeway fast as his last breaths were leaving him, how when we pulled up into the entrance of the animal hospital, he let go and died. He just up and died. And after a week, I was telling Augie about it, and I had to pull over. I couldn't drive. I couldn't see out of my eyes. Sometimes I still wake up missing him so much. I measure my life not by coffee spoons, not by bottles of wine, not even by the human relationships, but by my dogs, Droopy, Beep, Yuki, Droopy number two. And then there was Felix, who I spent over 10 years with, the two of us walking alone through cities, through deserts, City of the Rocks, Joshua Tree, Venice Beach, on the banks of rivers, up the mountains that surround El Paso. Then came Kafka. I am 50 years old now, and I am entering my Kafka years. When my poet partner and I realized we loved each other too deeply to stay married and went our separate ways, she took Sonnet. Makes sense that the poet would take Sonnet, and Kafka happily followed me up the stairs to my new apartment. He's a small dog, a shelter dog with floppy ears that hang down to the floor and scraggly hair and big black eyes that beg for something just to look at you. We live with our cat, Joey, the three of us in an apartment so close to Ciudad Juarez that the white bus that passes across the street out my window is a Mexican bus, the driver a young man with his Virgen de Guadalupe icon sparkling green and red above his rearview mirror. Kafka sleeps curled up in my underarm, and when Joey is tired of being up to no good, he curls up in the other, as if I were a man with the hairiest of underarms. In the morning, I make coffee and we go downstairs, Kafka and I wait for him as he sniffs around and pees on trees and rocks. Then we go up the stairs and I write. After a morning of writing, the sun shines harsh over the Juarez rooftops, and we go for a walk. I bring him everywhere I go, to work, to the park, outdoor cafes, and I bring him to the show with me when I record. He's here now, next to me, curled up like a sleeping fox. He considers Ben his uncle. He likes Norma, our producer, and when she gives him attention, he feels special. Sometimes Kafka and I walk to Mexico. I like that I can say that. My dog and I, Kafka and I, we walk to Mexico. How many people can say that? If we could just walk out the French doors of my balcony and step over the river, which is just a thin strip of water, we could be there in 3 minutes. But when we walk to Mexico, we have to go through the international port of entry, the bridge on Santa Fe, which from our apartment door is a 20-minute walk. When we get to Mexico customs, we turn around, walk around downtown El Paso as if we really knew something. Downtown El Paso swarms with Mexicans, and to walk through the streets of downtown, the hustle, the discount stores, mayoreo de ropa, the sexy jeans, the dollar stores, is like walking in any Mexico city, and sometimes we stop and buy a burrito from a boy who carries them in an ice chest warmed and lined with foil. This is my life, and it is with Kafka. Joey, too, but Joey's another story waiting to happen. Even though he looks like a wise old dog, Kafka is only 3 years old, and he's small, a mixed-raced mutt. So statistically, he may have another 12 to 15 years of life. And as I enter the gates of old age, I have to wonder, is Kafka the anti-penultimate chapter of my life story, the penultimate? I recently lost my final parent to death, and statistically speaking, based on how long my parents have lived, Kafka may be my last dog. These words may be the final chapter to my story. On the other hand, I just turned 50, and 50 is the new 40. I'm healthy. I live stress-free, pretty much. I'm working on a new book. I love my job teaching the great works of Kafka and Borges. To get a new dog, to get a puppy, to train him or her is to invest in the hope of the future. And who knows, in a few years, wherever I may be, whatever part of old age I may be exploring, I might look down at Kafka, who will most likely be walking beside me or ahead of me, sniffing out a safe path for us to travel, and I might say, Kafka, how would you like a sister? I won't name her Maggie. Well, that was a great show. Thank you, Ben, for sharing that poem by
Karen Fizer.
And thank you, Rita Mae Brown. Wonderful interview. I really enjoyed it. And I enjoy imagining her living on that farm with 11 dogs. I don't know how many cats, how many horses and birds and all those other things. It sounds like a great life for
a
writer.
It's a peaceable kingdom. You have one, too. And thank you for your poetic license on your
Little Friends.
Little Friends.
Okay, join us next week when we have another great guest, another great show.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Words on a Wire.
This is Daniel Chacon.
And this is Benjamin Alida Sainz.
And don't forget,
the next book you read
could save Kafka's life.
I'm up on Taiwan.